morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott is going to be with us, speaking of the arts, as he does every Friday. Right now, I'd like to welcome Amy Irvine. She is the author of the book Trespass, Living at the Edge of the Promised Land. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is a memoir about a time in your life when you moved to southeastern Utah. You moved after the death of your father. Why did you choose that place?
That is a question I have yet to be able to answer well. I think I knew that I was my father's daughter, and that more civilized places, more crowded places, were not the best for me. And he and my grandfather, who was a fifth-generation rancher, both taught me a love of big landscape. And I think after my father committed suicide, it was inspiration to go where he hadn't gone in time. I also had the inspiration of falling in love with a man who already lived down near the edge of this particular county. And I wanted to move deeper into the desert than the community he lived in, but it was closer. So I think two men that were inspiring me at once.
And you are half Mormon, which I gather is unusual because Mormons don't intermarry very much.
That's correct. There are contradictions. Well, they abound everywhere in the family. Half the family is rural Mormon ranching, my mother's side, and my father's side are all urban intellectuals. The irony of this is that my father's side, who are now what Mormons refer to as Gentiles, they're the ones with the impressive Mormon pedigree. My great-great-great-grandfather on that side was one of Brigham Young and Joseph Smith's original bodyguards, and one of the very first hand-picked Mormons to make the trek across in search of their promised land.
And which is in the title of the book, Living at the Edge of the Promised Land. And we'll talk about the title in just a few minutes. But what is the culture of Mormonism like in this small town that you moved into in the middle of ranching country?
It's a very, very different breed. And I actually have a very short section I could read to you about that.
Great.
Because it is so unique from the Mormonism that interfaces with the rest of the world. I am driving en route to my new home in southeastern Utah to San Juan County in this scene. This is my heritage. This is what comes with me in the U-Haul, part of the baggage I convey to San Juan County. I am ambivalent about this legacy, my place in it, and it is through this lens of uncertainty that I now look upon the Mormon temple in Monticello. Since birth, I have lived in the shadow of such a building, but this one stands in what is true outback country, an icon that exemplifies not only how saturated the West is with Mormon history and tradition, but just how deftly the religion appeals to a variety of worlds. The temple of my childhood stood amid an urban epicenter, and though that center was predominantly Mormon, it was a relatively sophisticated and worldly brand of faith, if only by necessity. But San Juan County has changed little since the first Mormon pioneers settled the area. It is a relic of the oldest kind. Its people and culture seem to outsiders not only oppressive, but nearly prehistoric in their ways. The temple before me represents a different kind of Mormonism, less deluded, more insulated, almost oblivious to the machinations of the outside world.
And so this is San Juan County. Of course, it's the southeast corner of the Four Corners area. What do people do there? Is it really mostly ranching?
It was mostly ranching. Unfortunately, ranching along with all the small family farms and local industries seem to be getting lost in this new economy, in this new West. And so more and more the young people are leaving to go find different kinds of jobs. But there's not much else down there other than extractive industry. So either you work for oil and gas or mining, or you try and eke it out in a really arid landscape as a rancher.
So you were working with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance.
I was.
And the culture of that, I mean, this is, one of the things that's so interesting about the book is the culture clash between people who are really working for wilderness and then the locals there who've been there for quite a long time. Mm. What was that like? I mean, there's all these painful moments where you're trying to be accepted by the local people, but you are working with this organization and you're sort of like not telling people about it because they think that the Wilderness Alliance is a bunch of wacko extremists.
Yeah, it was interesting how I went down there thinking that my Mormon pedigree, my credentials, and the fact that these were my people on many levels, that that would somehow give me an entree into the community. And it's very easy to be the ardent environmentalist when you live in an urban area. But to
or
go
Santa Fe. Or yeah.
Exactly. But to go into the heart of a county that is feels very persecuted by the federal government.
In what way does it feel persecuted by the federal government?
Well, this is part of what the book examines, is there have been land use battles all over the West, but nowhere have they been more colorful than in Utah. And that is very much because of the Mormon heritage and the sense of persecution they've had ever since they were chased out of three eastern settlements.
So you're, in a way, they're waiting for persecution, and when anything that looks like persecution comes along, that's what it feels like, and that's what it is.
Exactly. The last thing they want is the federal government in there or any outsider telling them what to do. But I didn't consider myself that much of an outsider. I felt like it was my homeland. I felt like I knew these people, and that I had, I inhabited a certain fence. And when I started to write this book, and when I went down there, I was more strident in my views. And as time went on, I realized I empathize with rural folks a whole lot more than I realized, and this is part of my need to belong. This is part of my fear of really putting my foot down and drawing the bright line in the sand around wilderness, and that I was slowly developing a certain insanity or schizophrenia over this fence that I inhabited. And every time I started to write about this, I would envision the quintessential Western coyote strung up on the barbed wire fence, a stranger in his own land, this persecuted creature, which I think a lot of people in the West feel like, especially those who've grown up in a Mormon community and don't feel like they quite fit in. And I finally came to terms with the fact that I wasn't ever going to inhabit easily either side of the fence, and that my story was hung up on that fence. And once I got comfortable with that, it was easier for me to write this book as well as interface with people who had different views than I did, at least in the political sense, and the religious sense. I would say that when it came down to it, we had a whole lot more in common than one might realize.
We're talking to Amy Irvine. The book is called Trespass, Living at the Edge of the Promised Land. And that thing of what you have in common and what you don't have in common is something that we have a lot of these issues in New Mexico, and I was thinking how different it would be to take this book to, you know, New England versus people in the West reading it. But for example, you have you and environmentalists and wilderness advocates and cowboys and ranchers and people who've been there forever who all love the land.
Exactly.
But they do it in very different ways, and their philosophies about what is dangerous and what should be there are really different.
They're very different, and yet on the most fundamental levels they're the same. And I think that that's my ultimate point in the book, is that we've seen this happen time and again, and I examine sort of the prehistory on the Colorado Plateau and in the West, and how there was a time when thinking was less divided, less black and white, less dualistic, and that was all the way back in hunter-gatherer times, but it was a very long, successful, and peaceful period in human history by all indicators that we have.
I love this, the hunter-gatherer. Yesterday we had on an author talking about the wonderful Minoan civilization. Now we're talking about the wonderful hunter-gatherers who, you know, had a balanced diet and gender parity and no tooth decay and all these things that we've been talking about.
Yes.
Before we went on the air.
And people usually roll their eyes and think I'm romanticizing the loincloth and the spear and hurling the spear, and I'm not, but I'm saying that if we evolve for tens of thousands of years with a certain psyche and a certain physiology, and we're not living in accordance with that anymore, no wonder we're living soulless lives, no wonder we're stressed, and we have all these stress-related illnesses and mental illnesses. And that if you go back and look at that period, we have something to learn about thinking that is more complex, less dualistic, less fundamental. It's when I know this is not a PC term, but I use the term Anasazi because it has historical context for us. The Anasazi, when they came into vogue and turned to agriculture, that's when we see the stress-related illnesses, the starvation, the malnutrition, the gender disparity, the warring, the cannibalism at points. That's when things fall apart. And interestingly enough, the rock art begins to decline, and the spiritual life, although it's getting more rigorous and more intense and more fundamental, it's getting less soulful. And so anyway, I use a lot of these parallels to look at where we're headed now and to just probe how we might find a new relationship with the desert, which I think we all have on that deep genetic level. And and that I think is where the hope is. The wilderness debate, public lands debate at this point is completely polarized.
Well, what tell us about that polarity. What does each group deeply believe?
Well, it's getting more complex, interestingly enough, and I'll explain that why in a minute. But we have the environmentalists, the public lands advocates in the West are basically, for the most part, saying we need to protect as much as possible. This new West is destroying the desert so rapidly, and just the demographic shifts into the West, we don't have enough water. How are we going to deal with these issues? We need to lock up as much land as we can. And the other side is saying, we have been here for generations working the land. America needs to eat. We need to produce our own food and our own resources, and that's why we have public lands, especially BLM-managed lands. We have enough places protected. We don't want any more federal intrusion. I appreciate both sides, and I suggest by the end of the book that there's something more fundamental underneath that, and that we have to get back to whatever that common denominator is, which, again, I think hints at our true deep roots, our true attachment to landscape. And I actually have another quick little scene in the book where the man whom I have fallen in love with, who this is very much a love story too at its heart, he and I are driving up the Blue Mountain Road in the Abajos in San Juan County on Christmas Day, and we find a coyote who's just been shot, and he's been strung up on the fence. And my now husband couldn't bear it, and he got out to remove the coyote and give him a proper burial. We've hiked out into some trees, and this is what happens. A truck hauling bales of hay approaches, a rancher most likely taking winter feed to cows still in the foothills. He sees my truck, comes to a stop, and with his eyes follows our footprints into the woods. We can see him, but the trees obscure us from his view. Just then, a small herd of mule deer jump the fence and bound across the road in front of him. He turns to watch. As a deer brush through the trees on the other side of the road, the boughs sift sugar snow, and a flock of dark-eyed juncos rushes out. In that moment, the man's expression is both serenity and delight. It is the look of a man who loves his place in the world, a place he knows in his bones and would do anything to defend. And in him, I can see a certain knowing. This is a man who will do his chores and return to his family, an entire tribe of grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, wife, children. They will share the holiday, and tomorrow they will go to church. There they will mingle with the greater tribe like their own, whose men will drift off to speak of the land, of the good God that gave it to them, and make arrangements to help the man get his cows down into the low country before the big snows hit. My point here is that I appreciate his place and his connection to landscape. And what's happening now is that these rural folks that have been there for such a long time are now seeing this new West, the new populations coming in, these ranchettes, these subdivision of family ranches and farms, oil and gas development, now uranium mining again, off-road vehicle recreation. A lot of these things, these traditional families, many of them are now coming to organizations like the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and saying, don't use my name, but we've got some problems on our property, and the place is going to hell in a handbasket. So there's new gray areas, new
and
openings.
Alliances.
Exactly. And I find that that's where the possibilities are, and we just have to stop. And it was, the book ultimately chronicles the near demise of my own marriage, and it wasn't until that happened that I realized it's the same for any relationship that involves intimacy and community. It's, you have to step away from being entrenched in your position and find that gray area with the nuances, and that's the only place that possibility happens. And nowhere is that more true than in a marriage, as we all know. And we're living in a culture that has a greater than 50% divorce rate. Something's got to give.
We're talking to Amy Irvine, and she will be at Garcia Street Books tomorrow at 4:30 in the afternoon, talking about this new memoir, Trespass, Living at the Edge of the Promised Land. One of the things that is so interesting is the way you trace a kind of anti-environmentalism back to and connect it to Mormonism.
Yes. The more I researched Mormon history, because I was finding that the more I understood where my quote-unquote adversaries were coming from, the more appreciation I had for their experience, and we could actually find new language and new ways to have a discussion beyond the same old tired rhetoric that I was hearing every time I stepped out on the street. And as I did this research, I realized that Brigham Young's the line he drew around what he called the Kingdom of Deseret, which once they came out to the Salt Lake Valley, he didn't want just Utah. He drew a line around part of Oregon, a large chunk of California, all of Nevada, part of Arizona, New Mexico, a bit of Colorado, a bit of Wyoming and Idaho, and all of Utah.
And that was Deseret.
It was enormous. And if you look at where the public lands debates are today, the most heated ones, especially over wilderness designation, they're in former Deseret, wherever a Mormon outpost has been established. And so I suggest in the book that I think the whole wilderness debate is more Mormon in its roots than we realize, the contention over it, and understandably so, because not only did the Mormons have this issue with federal persecution, but they also had a very, as much as they are attached to this land, a very adversarial relationship to it. There are passages in the book that I refer to that I found in diaries of the pioneers coming across the plains. By the time they got here, their journey just to get to Utah, let alone settle on the Colorado Plateau, was brutal. And they did have to fight tooth and nail to survive. And so that...
Yeah, nature doesn't seem so benign when you're really trying to get through it in the absence of any kind of other amenities.
Exactly. And I think that's what I've had callers call in on some of the interviews I've done or some of the question and answer at the readings I've done in bookstores of people saying, yeah, those rural people really are loving the land to death. And I say, the urbanites are too. It's really easy for us to love the landscape the way we do when we have our nice cozy SUVs and we live here with all our amenities. But living
and do car camping.
It's a very different thing to live in the desert than it is to recreate in it.
So there's a chapter in your book about the Heavenly Mother, which is a figure that has vanished from the Mormon psyche.
Yes. Toward the end of the book, part of my own spiritual journey, for lack of a better word, my own psychic crisis, as my marriage is dissolving and I'm watching the landscape that I love just come unraveled at every turn with, after 9/11, the oil and gas development stepped up tenfold. Off-road vehicle events, organized and unorganized, had taken over every corner of the desert. And I was really in a place of hopelessness, and it suddenly occurred to me one day that in Mormonism there is not even a single angel. There's not even an image of the Virgin Mary to turn to that is female. And without any feminine divine, Mormon women are in sort of a unique place because they can't see themselves in the face of God, for lack of better words to use. And that I had grown up in this culture that I couldn't see my own divine, you know, my own something, and that was part of my hopelessness. And as you pointed out before we got on the air, that very well may have something to do with our dissociation from the land. If we've dissociated from half of what makes us whole, the mother, the feminine, then how could we ever have a connection to landscape that sustains us in very much the same way?
Again, we were talking about this yesterday on the air in terms of the Minoan civilization and Minoan culture, which apparently was very woman-centered and connected to the cycles of nature and so on, and you sort of don't want to get too much into this woman as nature, man as rational being thing.
No, not at all. I don't want to be that divided. I think that they are two sides of the same coin, and that it's sort of just part of thinking holistically about ourselves, our own psyches, about our relationship to the earth or to something, you know, more esoteric. I think it's dangerous territory to tread upon, but I think it's telling that the Heavenly Mother has been absolutely excised from every corner of Mormon theology and every
Like she used to be there, and she was literally, you know, photoshopped out.
Every academic, every historian, every layperson that has mentioned her existence has been excommunicated from the church.
Oh my goodness.
That's pretty intense.
Well, are you in the church? Would you be excommunicated?
I guess we'll see.
Are you part of the Mormon church?
I'm still, yes, I was baptized Mormon. And the this is very much my story of being half Mormon, half not, but and my struggle to get baptized and my struggle to be a child of God after that and not being able to be. And then my turn away from the church that, you know, was a pretty angry, passionate descent. And then sort of finding my own self amid all these things because reacting to them was as bad as buying into them.
Right.
I have one last little passage here that sort of, I think, summarizes some of these things that we're talking about. And it does come back to the coyote on the fence. God, dog. We fail to see the reflexivity of what lives inside us. Henry David Thoreau wrote, "In wildness is the preservation of the world." He did not say wilderness. He knew that no piece of land, no matter how scenic or pristine, would restore what we have lost in ourselves. That's not to say we don't need wilderness. I think we need it more than ever. For this is the place where coyote dwells, free of persecution, free of the projection of the abandoned, feared self. In coyote is the preservation of the soul. That howl, had I let it rise up into the dark night sky like a prayer, would have grounded me. And at the same time, it would have gotten me out of the house, nose to the ground, loping circles until I found my way. There would have been no map, and I would not have followed any sort of marked route. And what it would not have been the Mormon version of the celestial kingdom, white tile and golden streets I would have found. It would have been untrammeled desert, a landscape of faith, desire, and imagination, a landscape of the other. Scattered across it would be bones, old bones, stained in ancient red. Among them would have been the most original skull, not too large, with a pointed muzzle and sharp teeth. Male or female, it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been the face of God. Pray or crawl. I never imagined the voice as anything except either or. But really, for thousands of years, they were one and the same.
I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he's with us every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Good morning. How is you?
Fine, especially gazing at your marvelous mustache.
No, not in springtime. My mustache, what's that got to do with anything? Oh,
well,
I get it. Once again, I'm going to have to shave this thing just to show that you're the boss.
No, I'm not the boss. I don't know anything. It's just the burgeoning sprouts of the new signs of spring, namely Robert Knott's mustache.
Well, I usually spend my springs in a mattress, even when it's autumn. Listen, pick up the Pasatiempo today, and you will discover somewhere around page 26 that there are book reviews. Because we have inherited, we have transferred, whatever you wish to call it, the responsibility of doing book reviews in Pasatiempo, though there is no longer a Sunday book section in the New Mexican, as Terry England, the former editor of the book page, noted in his editorial on Sunday, we are doing book reviews, and that started this week.
Oh, great.
So there's quite a few, and I have to really mention Richard Grant's excellent book, God's Middle Finger, which is about his journeys through the Sierra Madre.
Oh, we're going to be talking about that next week.
Oh, it's great. Did you read it yet?
No, I haven't read it yet.
It's a really good read. You're going to really enjoy it. And he's doing a book signing sometime next week, I think March 13th, 5 p.m. at Garcia Street Books. So I urge you, it's a really great read. It's just one of those things that catches you. And there's a couple other reviews in there of the poetry book Desert Hours by Marion Olson. And Craig Smith wrote a review on Growing Up in Macbeth's Castle. So I haven't read the book yet, but apparently some people grew up in that castle where that guy used to hang out, that Scottish guy.
And this book, Trespass, Living at the Edge of the Promised Land, the author Amy Irvine will be at Garcia Street Books tomorrow at 4:30, and also tomorrow at 4 at Collected Works Bookstore, Natalie Goldberg, old friend from far away, The Practice of Writing Memoir. It's a reading and book signing.
That's good. I'm working on my memoirs, which are going to be called What Went Wrong.
Which is called The Three Stooges and Other TV Shows That I Watched.
Don't get me anticipated about that. I'm trying to revertebrate myself off of some of this stuff.
Revertebrate? What, are you spineless?
I noticed you had Craig Barnes in here the other morning. That was a pretty good dialogue while the snow was falling. Was that yesterday morning?
That was yesterday.
The snow was falling. Craig S. Barnes was calling. Anyway, he was talking. about being in search of the lost feminine.
Mm.
I'm always in search of mine. I know it's down there somewhere, and I'm always looking for it. It's decoding the myths that radically redesigned culture. Is that it?
That's right.
Reshape civilization. That's even better. And I know you spoke to him yesterday, but that's tonight at 7 o'clock at the Forum.
At the Forum of the College of Santa Fe.
Which is on St. Michael's Drive. You got to pay to get in, and proceeds are going to benefit the Santa Fe Girls School.
That's right.
So if you would like to hear Craig S. Barnes, a very likable guy, very respected guy, who also speaks very well. I have a feeling
he speaks very well indeed.
He's going to be chatting tonight at 7 o'clock over at the Forum. You need a phone number? Here it is, 820-3188. And, of course, you can get all this information in the Pasatiempo calendar.
Information?
Yeah, that's it. It's in our calendar. We have almost every arts and entertainment listing we can get our little fingers on when they are sent to us and when the press releases are correct, and we do our best to double and triple check them, and sometimes we still get it amiss. Meanwhile, if you're still in the mood for some theater, Living Out over at the College of Santa Fe continues. Clara Soyster, terrific director, is at the helm of this one. I haven't yet seen it. Sorry, I will try. Tonight, Sunday, tomorrow night. And Duet still playing, Red Thread Show over at El Museo Cultural. Tonight, 8 o'clock, Saturday, 8 o'clock, and Sunday at 2. The Peru Negro Dance Company, presented by the Santa Fe Concert Association.
I'm going to that.
That's when?
It's tonight, Afro-Peruvian Dance at 7:30. And Afro-Peruvian dance is a marvelous, wonderful thing to watch, and a lot of people don't even know about it. It's like African dance, but with Spanish and Andean influences because of the black community that grew up in Peru when they tried to import slaves to work in the highlands, but it was just way too high, and so they ended up settling on the coast. They imported slaves from Africa, who ended up on the coast of Peru and have a really wonderfully evolved dance and music culture.
Excellent. So is it the sort of dance that you go to watch and then you wish you were dancing as well?
Yep.
Great. That's 7:30 tonight at the Lenzic. What's the phone number?
988-1234.
Meanwhile, let's say you don't want to go see this exciting dance. You're not too keen about what I said about Craig S. Barnes, and you don't want to see theater. You want some, shall we say, intellectual stimulation.
What are you going to talk about, St. John's?
Was I ever? But go right ahead.
No,
I'm sure you
have all the...
No, please, speak up about Socrates. Let's hear it.
Socrates on Dialectic and Poetry in the Republic. It's part of the Dean's Lecture Series at the Great Hall at the Peterson Student Center at St. John's College tonight at 8 o'clock. It's free of charge and open to the public.
984-6000. What does it mean about Socrates on Dialectic?
Jacques Duvoisin is the lecturer. I don't know. You have to go and see.
What republic are they talking about? The Greek Republic?
There's a work of Plato called Plato's Republic. It's called The Republic. And it's one of the...
Oh, so Socrates was writing about his friend.
What?
Socrates was talking about his friend Plato at the time of his lecture.
Kind of the other way around, but it's one of those things that's very funny because a lot of phony politicians will pretend that they reread The Republic every year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know... It's
and they
just,
don't. And it's
and
easy
they
to catch,
don't because
like
they don't even know what it's about. Well, I mean, my favorite example is, if I'm remembering this correctly, it was Danforth Quayle, Vice President of the United States in the 80s.
That's right.
Now, I looked for the footnote on this, and I couldn't find it, so I'm not sure this is true, but apparently he told people that he reread The Republic every year, and a journalist said, "What do you think about the cave allegory?" And he said, "Oh, I forgot that part." Which is the most famous and one of the most central parts of the whole thing, and he couldn't remember.
Well, now you got me stimulated. What is the cave allegory?
Oh, that, we can't go into that right now.
Oh, I see. So you're getting out of it just like Dan Quayle.
No.
Yes, you are.
I could talk about it, but then we wouldn't be speaking of the arts because we would also have to talk about the St. John's College Faculty and Art Show, which is also happening tomorrow from 5 to 8 in the evening.
No, it's tonight.
I mean tonight. Is it tonight?
It's tonight. The show runs through April 20th, but they're going to be going on spring break, so they will be closed next weekend and the weekend of the 21st and 28th. So go and see it soon. But it does run through April 20th, and that's, you're right, go up to St. John's for education, eradication, and exaltation.
And art.
Not to mention exhaustation. Java Joe South on Rodeo Road, they're going to have some landscapes. Paintings by Kim Leonard, reception 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. College of Santa Fe Fine Arts Gallery has Carl Huffman versus Trevor Lucero. Yay, that's like wrestling. Oh, boy. And two artists going at each other in a dual show. Paintings by a couple of Albuquerque guys. Reception 5 to 8 p.m. Elizabeth Cook Romero, Pasatiempo's visual arts writer, penned a piece about them, and it's in today's Pasatiempo.
And by the way, speaking of more literary events, tomorrow morning, Saturday at 10 o'clock on Camp Lovewave, right here on KSFR, you can hear part two of Taryn Lovewave's conversation with author Tom Robbins, where he will discuss the dance with his muse and creativity.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a few muses I wouldn't mind dancing with.
Oh,
Scottish
yeah.
country dance.
Can you say more about that?
I could, but I'd have to bring up Ursula Andress, and then you'd roll your eyes.
I rolled them already.
Scottish country dance. What's the difference between a reel, a jig, and a strathspey? Well, strap on your best pair of dancing shoes and find out. 7:30 p.m. tonight over at Odd Fellows Hall, 1125 Cerritos Road. Small cover charge includes a lesson, so you get to learn how to do Scottish country dance. I won't try to speak like Sean Connery, nor will I launch into my rendition of You Take the High Road and I'll Take the Low Road. Last time I got that, I got a lecture about the history of the piece. Yes, how do you pronounce it? Y-J-A-S-T-R-O-S, the American Flamenco Rep Company? Does it sound like Yastros? Y-J-A-S-T-R-O-S, Yastros. My apologies always if I mispronounce, it's never on purpose. National Institute of Flamenco presents this troupe at 8 o'clock at the Lenzic. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, so that's that. You already talked about Natalie Goldberg, you talked about Amy Irvine. But did you talk about David Remley?
No.
He's the author of Adios Nuevo México, the Santa Fe Journal of James Watts from 1859. In 1859. Anyway, it was like 150 years ago. He's going to be talking about this book at 1:30 p.m. Saturday out in El Dorado at the El Dorado Community Center. One Hacienda Loop, 982-1172. There ain't no charge. Meanwhile, here in town at the San Busco Center, it's the 13th annual Santa Fe Pen Fair.
Pen Fair?
No, you're supposed to say yay.
Yay.
This is great. Santa Fe Pens presents the state's largest gathering of pen manufacturers and enthusiasts. There's going to be an appearance by author Cindy Bellinger. Come and see the Santa Fe Pen Spec Miata race car. That's great.
That's great.
That's going to be 10 to 6 on Saturday, and they're also doing it on Sunday from noon to 5. It's in San Busco Center. So if you like pens, and I love pens. When I was a kid, I used to collect different colored pens, and I also liked, oddly enough, different colored cupcakes that would like different icing.
And you would write on the icing with your pen and mess it up?
Don't preambulate what I'm about to say. No, that's not what happened. Right on a pen. What do I look like?
I used to use a fountain pen with turquoise ink when I was a little girl, and I wrote in my diary with that every night.
And I'm sure you wrote in the drinking fountain at the school since it was a fountain pen. Why would you? You kept a diary?
Did. Oh, God. I kept, because I still have them.
Ooh, I'd
shelves
love to read
and
them.
Shelves full.
Oh,
no,
I
it's not
dying.
Interesting. It's not like Oscar Wilde. No. It's just silly.
How would you rate it?
Silly girl stuff. I don't know. I rarely go back and read them. Sorry I did.
I can take these and turn these into a journal that I open the eyes of Santa fans. You and I are going to make a lot of money between this and that movie idea we have, Mudslide.
Mudslide.
We are going to be millionaires by the end of this year.
Ooh.
We're going to be able to, perspire from these jobs and do something else.
I think we're already perspiring on the job. I know I perspire when you're nearby.
The steamy journals of Mary Charlotte.
Steam. They're
Let
not.
Let me edit, but I'll
not.
Change things. No one will know. We'll add a few things.
Change things. Yeah, when the Three Stooges and Bigfoot references come creeping
there'll
in.
There'll be one little Bigfoot reference maybe, but you're not the type for the Three Stooges. But if we put a little thing about like these two twin brothers you went out with on your 18th birthday, I can really make that turn into something that's scintillating, licentious, and very readable.
You mean licentious?
That too.
Okay. Well, I got an email from somebody titled Help Raise a Ruckus, and it's all about ensuring safe drinking water in Santa Fe. Don't know too much about it, but it's about the Buckman Direct Diversion Project, and if you would like more information, you can call Rick Carpenter at 955-4206.
Okay, pronounce this word for me. I will spell it. C-O-U-T-U-R-E.
Couture.
Okay, so the Native Couture fashion show is going to be at 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture.
Oh, that's great, because they have a show titled Native Couture, which is wonderful.
This is the this lecture by Native Jewelers is going to be followed by a fashion presentation, and it ties in with that show by museum admission on Sunday. New Mexico residents, no charge. Go to the museums on a Sunday. It's free for you to go. And so on the Native Couture, is that right? Fashion show.
Uh-huh.
I really do have trouble with words. I've had them all my life, and I write because I use a dictionary. And I try not to...
Do you use an online dictionary, or do you actually use the book?
No, I use old books. I don't
really?
Use that like using online stuff. I don't even have personal email.
Really?
Yes. I don't like looking at online stuff.
I like the online dictionary, and I like the online thesaurus. Because in every word in the thesaurus, you can click on that, and you can get to the words that you want so quickly. I love it.
I think there's going to be some thesauruses in that new movie, 10,000 BC. It's got mammoths and dinosaurs and stuff.
You're talking about the Brontosaurus.
No, the Thesaurus is one of those guys like the Pegasaurus, those monsters that used to chase people and eat them. They're going to see that in this movie.
Hey, Impact Personal Safety, which yep. is a group that teaches self-defense. I've taken their course. They're having a children's personal safety class coming up
Excellent.
March 15th and 16th. A 20-hour teen girls basic course coming up in April, and a 20-hour women's basic course.
Take these classes.
In May, the end of May, beginning of June. A fight night review class in June. All sorts of things. For more information, you can call me. Scroll down here. You can call Impact Personal Safety at 992-8853.
Yeah, do that, really. You'll feel much better about yourself. I think those are great classes.
You want me to show you some of the moves that I learned?
You've already shown them to
They're
me.
They're not very nice.
Why would you suddenly threaten me on the air just because you're stronger than me? I used to get beat up by girls when I was in the fourth grade.
I'm not stronger than you.
This is terrible.
I'm not stronger than most people.
There's nothing worse than a man getting beat up by women, believe me.
No, but you can learn to do it with these impact classes.
You do it every week with the verbal colloquialisms
you,
that you
You do
to
it to me.
Boy. I'm always
Everyone
nice
says
to you.
Robert gives you such a hard time,
I try
Mary
to
Charlotte.
Help you. I try to get you out of your rut by offering great get-rich-quick schemes. I have come up with a great movie
Yeah,
idea.
By coming up with, by reading my own private personal teenage diary.
I'll barely scan it. I just need some suggestions to get going. The imagination takes over. You don't need any factual things when it comes to diary. Did I just scratch something?
Yourself.
All right, the school.
An exhibition of watercolor paintings.
When I get my hands on you, I'm going to.
An exhibition of watercolor paintings by Santa Fe artist Roger Jones entitled Visual Jazz is being held at the Tybee Davis Satin Gallery at the Main Library on Washington Avenue today through March 31st. You can meet the artist today from 4 to 6 in the gallery, and proceeds from the sale of watercolors will benefit Friends of the Santa Fe Library, a nonprofit organization.
That's good. Hey, what time is it?
8:47.
Okay, listen to this.
I'm listening.
The School for Advanced Research Public Lecture Series is going to present a lecture by anthropological archaeologists, and sometimes you and I argue about what an anthropologist and archaeologist is. This guy's both. John Cantner, 3:30 Tuesday at the
School great. We've had him on
for
here.
Advanced Research Boardroom, and he's going to be speaking about the archaeology of cannibalism. So, now, honestly, Craig Smith wrote a piece about this in today's Pasta, and it's one of the stories I have not yet read. I apologize, but I will read it today. But if you want to read about it, read Craig's story, The Archaeology of Cannibalism, 3:30 Tuesday, SAR Boardroom, 660 Garcia Street. There ain't no charge. On Wednesday, some interesting theater occurring. James Baldwin's, you know, the late black
author,
essayist.
I do know James Baldwin,
yeah.
Amazing author.
Sonny's Blues, a really great short story he wrote 50 years ago. And the San Francisco-based Word for Word Theater Company, which, as you know, takes literary pieces and turns them into theatrical pieces without missing a word. They're presenting a production based on this short story set in 1950s Harlem, 7:30 p.m. Wednesday night at the Lens. Again, know the phone number, 988-1234. You do got to pay to get in. I wrote a story about it in today's Pasatiempo.
Hey, there's an opening of an art show at the Underground Gallery of Contemporary
That's
Art.
That's right.
Opening today from at 5 o'clock through 8:30. The show is now through March 26th, and it's called The Long Now, an
That's
art installation by Rocky Lewicki.
Yeah,
We've had him on this show before, and he is really a marvelous artist, very interesting, good thinker as well as good artist. And the address of that is 100 West Marcy. And he's also got a great dog.
I'm sure he's a nice person, but I remember all those old 1930s Warner Brother pictures where, like, the bad guy was Rocky or Lefty or Blackie. So if you met somebody by that name, you knew they were bad.
Yeah, but you should see this dog.
Joyce Robbins Gallery, down at Galisteo Street, 201, has Nature Reinterpreted, an invitational group show, reception 5 to 7 p.m. tonight through March. And the Manitou Galleries, 123 West Palace, has the New Mexico Landscape Group Show, reception 5 to 7:30 p.m. through March 20th. So a couple of downtown galleries, Joyce Robbins and Manitou, among others, having openings tonight. So is Sage Creek Gallery, 200 Old Santa Fe Trail. Here we go. I'm going to mispronounce this because it's either in French or something. Nomades del Arte. Juried exhibit of work by plein air artists. Reception and award ceremony as well tonight at 5 o'clock at the 200 Old Santa Fe Trail Sage Creek Gallery location. Plein air means they work in the nude.
Yeah, right, whatever.
Wednesday, we were talking about James Baldwin's Sonny's Blues. She doesn't believe me. But we also have Our Lady of Buenos Aires. relatively new play by Chilean author Alfredo Cordel. It opens at the Wise Fool Studio, but it's being presented by Teatro Paraguas with Mary Meir directing, 8 o'clock. And it covers, I've read it, it's really interesting. I've written about it for a story for next Friday's Pasa. It covers the strange period in the career of Maria Falconetti, an actress I don't expect many people to know unless they've seen the 1928 silent picture, The Passion of Joan of Arc. She played the title character and went through hell to do it and never made another movie again. And in this particular play, the spirit, so to speak, of her director from that picture comes back to extol her to sort of finish her mission. And it's kind of a surreal, strange play. I'm still trying to figure out what to make of it. But it opens 8 o'clock, Wise Fool Space, with a Pay What You Wish opening 8 o'clock that night. It also runs Thursday night, which, by the way, is the night that the Santa Fe Playhouse presents their preview of Enchanted April.
Yay.
You know that one?
Yeah, yeah. No, the movie.
Well, it's Elizabeth Von Arman wrote a book about it. A bunch of women are bored. They're living in London like in the 1920s, having lousy husbands. One of them says, gee, let's go on a trip. So they go over to Italy. Suddenly there's fresh air, beaches. One says the other, gee, the water looks refreshing. I didn't bring my suit. The next one says, that's quite all right. No one but women around. So they go down to the shore and they drop their...
Look at you. You just get so happy even thinking about it.
It's 8 o'clock on Thursday, Enchanted April. It's a Pay What You Wish preview, and that'll be a story in Pasa next week.
You're crazy.
Remember that song? Some Enchanted April.
All right. Hey, tomorrow at Tropic of Capricorn, Get Green with Michael. It's a landscape design, planning ahead for spring, advice on designing an inviting water-conserving landscape. And then from noon to 3, small dog rescue pet adoptions. There's dogs and good dogs that need you. 983-2700 or visit tropicofcapricornsantafe.com.
Speaking of dogs, animals, and other critters, I got to plug something on the New Mexican. I didn't even know. They didn't even tell me about this till this week. But now we have this part of our website, and it's called Santa Fe Scoop. Now, what does it sound like to you if you heard that? You'd think, what, that there's some good gossip or something? We're going to find out what's happening in your diaries? But no, Santa Fe Scoop. It's a sub-portion of our website, the Santa Fe New Mexican. It's animals. It's pictures of animals. People put in their pictures, and they have names for the animals. And it looks like the animals are speaking for themselves, which, by the way, could be very cohesive and comprehensive, not to mention possibly true. So there's this great photo, for example, of a tiger swimming underwater, and then there's like a horsey, then there's a
Did you just say a horsey?
Yeah, there's like hirsute horses and cuddly kitties and playful puppies, and I could be mistaken, but I bet there's a darling ducky. So anyway, if you like animals, go to the Santa Fe New Mexican's website, which is easy to find. Google Santa Fe New Mexican. You can also find Pasa Tiempo.
Just sfnewmexican.com.
Yeah, you can find the Pasa Tiempo on there, epasatiempo.com. But go check out Santa Fe Scoop, put together by one of our copy editors, Ben Schwan, a really fun guy.
Excellent.
Fun guy. That made it sound like he's a parasite or an amoeba or something.
No, it's like a mushroom walks into a bar, says to the bartender, get out of here. We don't serve food here. He says, oh, come on. I'm a fun guy.
Did you ever see that movie, The Attack of the Mushroom People?
No.
These people go to an island, and it's a Japanese movie, and they're shipwrecked like Gilligan's Island, except Tina Louise isn't with them, so it's less fun. But anyway, they eat mushrooms, which is a big mistake because they're poisonous, and they start turning them into mushroom monsters, so they start chasing each other.
Cool.
It terrified me. What do you mean cool? I didn't sleep for like years after I saw that movie. I'd like to get my hands on a video of it. You feel like going up to down to Madrid? Johnson's in Madrid's having an opening. Buildings, Bushes, and Babes. Oh, I love that title. Paintings by Mel Johnson from 1973 to the present. Also, the Wearables and Wallables show is happening. Meanwhile, the Tapestry Gallery down there in Madrid's having Weavings on Parade, which is work by Donna Lorraine Contractor.
Did you just say tapestry?
Yeah, tapestry.
Tapestry.
Really?
Yeah.
I had a friend who had a tapestry worm years ago, but he finally got rid of it. He used a hammer. Up in Los Alamos, Roger Benjamin's contemporary drama about aging baby boomers, ha, must be about me, is at the Los Alamos Little Theater.
Are you a baby boomer?
I certainly am. Huh. I was born, never mind that, time enough. You never tell me when you were born, but if I got my hands in your diaries, I could figure
six
out.
In the evening.
The play's called Time Enough. It's at Los Alamos Little Theater, 7 o'clock tonight through March 22nd. Also in Los Alamos, the Art Center at Follett Lodge has a number of shows. For example, the Los Alamos Historical Society presents Ashley Pond's First Ranch School, which is actually a lecture by Sharon Snyder. Do you know much about Ashley Pond? They used to swim in it until the lab took it over. And I don't think anybody
swims
in it.
And now it's full of
like
radioactive
lizards
turtles.
Or something like that. The Santa Fe Children's Museum is always looking for help. volunteers to help with the stuff they have for kids, and they have terrific stuff for kids. I love that museum, 1050 Old Santa Fe Trail. Let me give you just a little litany of some of the shenanigans going on there this week. Today, from 9 to noon, Fam Jam. You can create an instrument, dance, and explore folk music and chants from around the world. Today, from 2:30 to 4:30, make scratch with crayons. It's scratch art. Saturday, 1 to 4, printing activities using vegetables as stamps. I'm not making this up. This just comes off the mushroom people thing. I would never want to use... What do? You could use the part of a cucumber as a stamp? Can you imagine? It'd be unfortunate if the postmaster was a vegetarian.
No, you cut a potato into a flat... You have a flat surface, and then you carve a shape, and then you put it in ink and you stamp.
Well, now I know where you're going to be Saturday.
That's
1 to 4.
First grade.
Wednesday, they have painting and drawing activities, 2:30 to 4:30. I never got out of the first grade.
I know.
Thursday, March 13th, you make a mask out of paper bags. Not a bad idea for somebody at this table. That's from 2:30 to 4:30. All these antics occurring at the Santa Fe Children's Museum. And I got to say, the Santa Fe Public Library has preschool story time. Songs, puppets, arts and crafts, finger rhymes, stories for kids age 2 to 6, 10:30 to 11:15 today at the main branch. 10:30 to 11:15 Tuesday at the Llano Street branch, Lafarge. And 10:30 to 11:15, this is like pre-lunchtime, so you get ready for your nap, on Wednesday at the Southside Library. All events, no charge, but I'm going to give you a phone number, 955-4863. What time is it?
8:56.
It's been really nice. It's been a great day. Read the book reviews in the Pasatiempo.
Hey, did you talk about what's going on at Gig tomorrow night?
No.
Gig, which is at... 1808 2nd Street at 7:30 tomorrow night. Chusco y Brusco, flamenco guitarist Chuscales and jazz guitarist Bruce Dunlap will be performing at Gig at 7:30. And there's not a phone number, but it's 1808 2nd Street. Suggested what? Donation.
I want you to know I like coming on your show and doing this.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so happy.
I don't ever mean to.
I like you too.
I don't mean to get off on these.
And I don't mind
when
you insult me. I think it's okay.
I don't think I insult you. I think I'm just trying to find a way to express to you that, you know, we're on different levels of communicable...
Communicable what? What's communicable?
Relationships, and I don't always have the vocabulary easily at my fingers to express to you the dilapidation I feel for you.
You feel dilapidation for me?
Well, some days.
You're falling apart?
No, it's more like... you know, being enchanted and enlightened and embalmed. So just thank you for letting me be on your show.
I don't know what he's talking about, but he's awful cute.
Wouldn't it be fun to see that mushroom movie together?
Oh, yes.
While I skim through your diaries? I tell you, I can make you a lot of money. Let me do that screenplay mudslide with you, and on the side, the literary beat, we'll do
You would be surprised at how boring they are. I haven't read them lately.
The Desirous Diaries of the Dame on the Radio.
Yeah, I'm sure that most of them are about desiring that something was happening when it wasn't happening.
We'll add that stuff. No one's going to know. Don't tell the truth on the radio. We'll fix it all.
Don't tell the truth on the radio.
Give me 3 days to work on that thing. We'll reiterate some of this stuff and regurgitate it in a fashion that will be salacious. People will pick that up in no time.
Salacious.
Yeah,
a new word by Robert Knott. The salacious Robert Knott joins us every day. The salacious Robert Knott is... associate editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. He's got two pairs of glasses, he's got a mustache, and he's raring to go. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz a la carta. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, it's now time for a full-fledged song by Robert Knott.
Forever be mine. Great Dean Martin tune. I love that song. It goes something like this. Till the roses turn to ashes, till the moonlight turns to dust. If you never come, I'll still be there till that organ turns to rust. You never heard that song? That's great. How I love to hear a choir in the chapel in the moonlight singing, won't you promise me forever be mine. Ciao.
Ciao.